Welcome back. In my last lecture, I talked about the development of different kinds of economies along the Pacific coast of South America. Particularly important here was the role of very different kinds of resources coming from different areas, including maritime foods, fish and shellfish, for example, a variety of different kinds of foods from the Andean highlands, including potatoes, and a number of other important domesticates that originated in the Andean highlands, are still important there, but have not spread across the globe in the way that potatoes have. Coming from other parts of South America, potentially corn and cotton. So we have the complexity of the interaction of these different kinds of resources coming from different environments, environments that, because of the distribution of geology and landscapes along the Pacific coast of South America, environments that are spatially, geographically, not that far apart. I also noted the controversy over Michael Moseley's maritime foundations hypothesis concerning the development of complex societies in this part of the world. The idea that those complex societies might actually have originated through economies based primarily on maritime resources, and particularly fish, rather than on agricultural goods. Archaeologists have known then that the highlands and river valleys of central Peru were theaters for a variety of different cultural and political innovations in the late 3rd and early 2nd millennia BC. We've known that for a long time now. Sites like Catoche and La Galgada in the highlands, and Huaca Florida and El Paraiso closer to the Pacific coast display common elements of ceremonial architecture, including fire pits, temples, and pyramids that became more elaborate over time. This is the kind of developments that we've seen in other parts of the world. Now, some of these sites may have been more or less entirely ritual centers where only minimal numbers of people would live over long periods of time, but where small communities in a region would unite periodically through the year, probably at certain times of the year, to conduct ceremonies led perhaps by small groups of hereditary ritual experts. Some of these sites are quite striking with elaborate architecture. They're fascinating sites. There are sufficient parallels between events at these different sites to speak of a common ritual tradition shared up and down the Pacific coast of Peru over a distance of at least 600 kilometers or 400 miles. It's a significant region over which we find similar ritual sites. This common ritual tradition seems to unite societies that had earlier developed along different cultural trajectories, almost as if we're speaking now of a religious system that spread across a region and was adopted across a region by a variety of different communities. We would have to wonder about how such a religious system developed and was adopted. For this early period, we have little information on these issues. But I will note that this is a theme that we're going to come back to in South American prehistory, in the prehistory of the Pacific coast of South America at various points through the next 3 lectures. I'd also want to point out that we have relatively little data on residential sites where the people constructing and using many of these ritual centers actually lived. So we've got a variety of quite spectacular ritual sites, What we would like to know is how these fit in to larger environments. And this makes it hard to evaluate the cultural connections between communities in different parts of the region that are associated with these ritual centers. So for the period between 2500 BC and 1500 BC, when a variety of these ritual centers appear, seems to have been one of increasing sedentism and probably of substantial population growth, both along the Pacific coast and in the highlands. We do have some settlement sites that have been founded, albeit, as I noted, often not associated with the ritual centers, which is really what we'd like, and some existing sites seem to have expanded in size. Recently, however, the beginnings of this period, the beginnings of this process of ritual elaboration have been pushed back by some centuries to about 3200 BC, and its initial stages seem to be more localized and more complex, and indeed, in many ways, more spectacular than archaeologists had earlier anticipated. The focus of social and cultural developments between about 3200 BC and 2500 BC really seems to be the Norte Chico area of central Peru, north of the modern city of Lima. In this area, a number of river valleys run through the foothills of the Andes to the Pacific coast of Peru. Now, archaeologists have known for some years that early sites, some with pretty spectacular monumental architecture, existed in this area. One of these sites, one of these coastal sites, Aspero, was actually important in the formulation of Moseley's maritime foundations hypothesis, which I mentioned in my last lecture. So we've known about these sites, known that sites like Aspero were important. Aspero sits close to the point where the Supe River Valley runs into the Pacific. This is one of these river valleys, as I noted, coming down from the foothills of the Andes and running into the Pacific. The site of Aspero was first occupied at some point before 3000 BC by people who engaged in the communal labor necessary to build six large platform mounds on the site. Now, the largest of these mounds, they're quite substantial. The largest of these mounds is 4 meters, or about 13 feet high, and it measures about 40 by 40 meters, or 130 by 130 feet, in area. A substantial investment in labor would have been necessary to construct these platforms. Shellfish and fish seem to have been the mainstays of the Aspero diet through the period of site occupation, which lasted until about 1500 BC. Now, Aspero was obviously an important site. It contains some of the earliest communal architecture in this part of South America. However, what really complicated things was the radiocarbon dating of a number of sites in the same region, especially further up the Supe River Valley. And I've spoken before about the ways in which a set of radiocarbon dates can really substantially change our interpretations of the archaeological record. And here we have a wonderful example of this, because archaeologists have known since the late 1940s that there were very large sites, some containing massive platform mounds, circular plazas, and residential areas along the Supe River, not that far from Aspero. This was well known. However, we assumed, the archaeological we here, I suppose, we assumed that these dated to about 2000 BC, just because they seemed to be so large when compared to known earlier sites. It was assumed that they were later and a sort of a development of monumental architecture in the region. they would be unlikely to date to later than 2000 BC, as there is no pottery visible on the surface at, for example, the Corral site, one of the most spectacular of these occurrences. Pottery appears in the area at about 2000 BC, so the absence of pottery at sites like Corral would mean that they were probably occupied at some point before that time. However, a radiocarbon dating program, a quite significant investment of effort and funding in radiocarbon dating, undertaken about 10 years ago, indicated that constructions at Corral, the largest and most complex of these Supe River sites, started at about 2700 BC and continued until 2000 BC. This was hundreds of years before anybody had expected to see evidence of architecture at Corral. Corral is located about 27 kilometers or 17 miles from the Pacific coast and thus from Espero. It's also a much larger site than Espero. Corral measures about 160 acres in size versus about 30 acres for Espero. It really is a quite extraordinary site because it's Corral's monumental architecture that really sets it apart. The largest platform mound on the Corral site, the so-called Pyramide Mayor, although the shape is, if anything, a truncated pyramid or a great platform. But the Pyramide Mayor covers an area of about 140 by 150 meters, or almost 500 by 500 feet. And it stands about 20 meters or 65 feet tall. There are five other such platform mounds on the site, and these originally probably all would have had buildings on top. There are also two sunken plazas or courtyards. There's a variety of other large structures and mounds, and there are at least two residential areas at Corral. These structures are all arranged around an open plaza area. This is an amazing site. To put this into perspective, the Pyramide Mayor at Corral has approximately the same base area as the Pyramid of the Moon at Teotihuacan. But the Pyramid of the Moon at Teotihuacan was built almost 3,000 years later. Now, the Pyramide Mayor at Corral is only about half as high, but it's still an extraordinary construction for this region for the mid-third millennium BC. And the Corral pyramids were built by much smaller populations. The population at Teotihuacan was perhaps 100,000 people. The Corral structures were built by much smaller populations and presumably with far less centralized political systems. It's really an amazing site. And as I said, the reorganization of people's ideas about the Peruvian past that resulted from this set of radiocarbon dates on sites that were already known, This has had all kinds of effects. People have really been changing their views of how Peruvian prehistory worked. The method of construction of the Corral platform mounds was also quite different than, for example, at sites like Teotihuacan. The core of these mounds is made up of net bags of rock and rubble. These are made with a variety of different kinds of fibers. They're heaped up, and then the resulting platform mounds are faced with stone and plaster. Now, this method of construction is convenient for archaeologists because we can radiocarbon date the vegetable fibers used in the net bags, and so we can actually get a direct measurement of the period of construction of these platform mounds. This method would also be well adapted to the progressive contribution to the construction by families in the area. And you can imagine this happening almost as a tax or tithe. Each family or each community perhaps would be expected to contribute a certain number of bags of stone for the construction of the pyramid mounds at particular times of the year. We could imagine this then as either a civil or a religious duty, depending on how we conceive of the center of authority responsible for the construction of this monumental architecture. The residential areas of Corral, grouped around the central plaza, seem to include rooms of two different qualities, and the archaeologists working at the site hypothesize that this may indicate occupation by elite and non-elite individuals or families. And it's going to take further archaeological investigations to confirm or refute that hypothesis. The architecture at Corral is fascinating, as are data on its economy. Irrigation agriculture was practiced at Corral, making use of water from the Supe River in the semi-arid foothills of the Andes where the site is located. So there was irrigation agriculture going on. There is no trace of either corn or potatoes at Corral or at any other Norte Chico sites that have been investigated to this point. So we don't have the later staffs of life for the region in these early sites of the 3rd millennium BC. Instead, irrigation was used to grow cotton and presumably possibly the other crops consumed in the site, because we know that people were eating beans and squash, for example, perhaps for the indigenous tubers and fruits that had been grown in the area for millennia. Besides that, people we know at Corral consumed large amounts of fish and shellfish. Indeed, we have evidence for virtually no other animal foods being consumed there. Lots and lots of fish and shellfish. So presumably then, these fish and shellfish were obtained from Espero and other contemporary coastal sites. Now the dates, because remember, Espero's actually earlier than Corral. These dates raise the question of what the historical relationship between Corral and Espero, which is further down at the mouth of the Supe River Valley, what the historical relationship between these two sites actually was. Espero was built earlier. Did it perhaps provide a model for the later construction at Corral? The archaeologists who've excavated and dated Corral, Espero, and neighboring sites hypothesized that a complex trading network may have extended up the Supe River Valley at this time, with coastal populations trading maritime products like fish for either raw cotton or for finished fishing nets and line that were essential to their fishing economy. That's a fascinating idea. Would indicate a fairly extensive and complicating trading network at this time. One question is, were the populations of these two communities ethnically the same group or not? Did they see themselves as part of the same society? At this point, we can't answer that question. There are at least 8 major sites similar to Corral, although generally smaller, in the Supe River Valley, and over 30 in the Norte Chico area as a whole. Most of these sites date to the 3rd millennium BC, and some seem to have seen large-scale communal construction before Corral. So we have to see this not as an isolated phenomenon just associated with the Corral site, but this fluorescence of monumental architecture, the building of these pyramids and plazas and courtyards seems to have been a real regional phenomenon dating back into the 3rd millennium BC. In the Norte Chico area, people built an extraordinary array of mounds and pyramids and residential areas and plazas, beginning by at least 3000 BC, and thus, remember, at the beginning of the dynastic period in Egypt and Mesopotamia, and continuing over the next 1200 years. The Pyramide Mayor at Karal was probably being built while Egyptian workmen were building the Giza pyramids. Now, of course, it was being built in rubble and not with face stone, but it's still an amazing construction for small-scale societies. As far as we know, the populations in the Supe River Valley were nowhere near the populations that we would expect to find in the Nile Valley at the same time. This is a really fascinating result for archaeologists. One that has only recently emerged, as I said, within about the last 10 years, and that's going to take far more work before we can fit this part of coastal Peru definitively into our accounts of global prehistory. In the meantime, the next question for this course is, what can we say today about socio-political systems at Karal, Espero, and related sites? Given what we've seen to this point in my lectures, we might expect that archaeologists would disagree in their interpretations of the political nature of these sites. And indeed, if we expected that, we'd be absolutely correct. Some archaeologists have called Karal a kingdom or a state, to some degree because of the massive architecture on the sites and the communal labor that would be necessary to build sites like Karal. They don't believe that this building project could have been undertaken without some strong central political authority, as well as the bureaucratic and administrative systems that the ruler of a state could call upon. In this interpretation, then, all of the Supe River Valley sites would presumably be under the control of a single state. Perhaps all of the Norte Chico sites, we don't know. Espero, which is earlier in date than Karal, has been identified by other archaeologists as the center of a chiefdom. We might then see a development from chiefdom to state-level society in the Supe River Valley from Espero to Karal over the period from about 3200 BC to 2700 BC, and this would be a nice transition, I suppose. Other archaeologists, and I have to say here I agree, think it's premature to identify states in central Peru at this very early date. Those researchers point to ethnographic examples of massive communal activities produced by pre-state populations. For example, we can look at some of the Hopewell populations in the American Midwest between perhaps 200 BC and AD 500 and the tremendous architectural structures that they built. They also point to the existence of residential distinction at Karal and hold that this indicates a differentiation between elite and non-elite inhabitants of the site. I would note, however, that this distinction in residential type of Karal is not visible in burials or other material culture from these Supe Valley sites. But in that case, if we are talking about pre-state societies with some degree of distinction between elite and non-elite groups, in that case, the different sites with monumental architecture in the Supe and neighboring river valleys would presumably be the centers of different chiefdoms. So, some archaeologists say states, some archaeologists say chiefdoms. Still other researchers point to the density of sites in the Supe River Valley. They range between 1 and 10 kilometers, or between about half a mile and 6 miles apart. And to the lack of any evidence for warfare or other forms of conflict among presumably competing chiefdoms at extremely short distances. As I said, half a mile apart, the closest of these ceremonial sites. They point to the evidence that no direct evidence for status distinctions exists on these sites. There really isn't any evidence beyond the fact that we have two different kinds of residential areas for status differences between different parts of the population. And those researchers doubt that we should be thinking of the Norte Chico sites as the expression of any kind of political dynamics. Instead, they conceive of these sites as the result of ceremonial activities among a number of neighboring communities, possibly associated with competitive feasting and the development of trading relations between coastal and inland groups. In this case, we could conceive of the massive building episodes of corral and related sites without necessarily thinking about complex political systems at all. These developments would be related to, and we should note, probably ancestral to, the appearance of ritual and ceremonial activities at sites like Katosh and El Paraiso in the wider region and later in the 3rd millennium BC. Archaeologists have variously identified the rise of the state in Peru as dating to anywhere between 3000 BC in the Norte Chico area and as late as AD 600 to 1000, all making use of the same archaeological data. And this is a striking illustration of the uncertainty that surrounds archaeological definitions of these different political forms. From my point of view, it's quite true that I don't think we necessarily have to have political centralization to have massive communal works. At the same time, it seems unlikely that there would be no status differentiation on the site at all. So we have a real conundrum here, trying to locate the source of authority, the source of communal coordination of labor at sites like Corral. Whether it's useful to try and fit sites like Corral into a simple band, tribe, chiefdom, state sequence is, from my point of view, quite doubtful. Some degree, some form of status difference between different groups, certainly. But perhaps one rather different than we see in many other areas of the world. For next time, we're going to look at the further development of political centralization and social-political hierarchy along the Pacific coast of South America, albeit in a context where this is often reflected through ritual activity. As we get closer to the present, we examine artwork and different kinds of iconography, and as these become more available to archaeological investigation, we can start to trace common themes, common cultural elements through time and over space. We can look at the spread of different religious traditions through the region and watch how these traditions are modified through time. This is going to be one of the themes of Andean archaeology through later periods, with the spread of, for example, the Chavín art styles that we'll look at in the next lecture. This process of ritual persistence and modification continues up to the Spanish conquest, at which point we have Europeans writing about some of the content of this ideology. And one question for archaeologists has to be, how do we think of the long-term relationship between these different ideological traditions expressed through monumental architecture and art at places like Cotosh and Corral? How can we understand the historical relationships between these ancient ritual centers and the religious manifestations that we see in Andean and Pacific South America at much later periods in time, after perhaps a 4,000 to 5,000 year remove? We'll begin to consider some of these questions, to ask ourselves some of these questions next time. Thank you.